Let me tell you a story, podcast number 138.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Call me Ishmael.
It was the age of wisdom.
Some years ago,
it was the age of
never mind.
It is a truth universally acknowledged.
You don't know about me without you.
Welcome to Let Me Tell You a Story with your hosts, Steve and Becky Lyles. Settle back into your seat, step onto your favorite fitness machine, or lace up your walking shoes, and enjoy stories from a variety of genres and authors.
Hi, this is Steve.
Hi, this is Becky. Welcome to Let Me Tell You a Story. Our guest today is our friend Adam Graham. I met Adam several years ago when he and his wife, Andrea, and I attended the launch meeting for a new writers group for fiction authors in the Valley. Since then, the three of us have each written several novels. Adam's novels include a detective story called Slime Incorporated, which is a fun read, as well as the powerhouse superhero comedy series. In addition, he's written short ebooks with titles like All I Needed to Know I Learned from Columbo, What Made the Golden Age Shine, The Perfect Church, and Your Average Ordinary Alien. We usually bring authors to our podcast to highlight their books, but we want to talk with Adam about books and podcasting because he's a prolific podcaster with 5 old-time radio podcasts to monitor each week. I think it's each week. You can find them under these names: Great Detectives, The Old-Time Dragnet Show, The Old-Time Radio Superman, The Amazing World of Radio, and The War. Welcome, Adam.
Glad to be here, Becky. Thanks for having me.
Get ready for unique, rare, and little-known treasures from the golden age of radio. You're listening to The Amazing World of Radio with Adam Graham.
You are one busy dude. Tell us about your podcast. When you say they're old-time radio shows, are these original recordings, or do you create new shows that copy the old style of radio storytelling, or how do you do it?
Well, I wish I had time and actors and money to do those sort of reenactments, but we really just go through radio. We just go through radio programs that were produced during the golden age of radio, and we play them with my commentary afterwards. And of course, I introduce the episode, explain the air date, give some basic information at the start. Yeah, we've been doing that now for, it's been 16 years
that
I've been doing old-time radio podcasts.
Oh, I didn't know. Yeah.
So we built up quite a back catalog there, you know, several thousand episodes that we've featured.
Well, very cool. I didn't realize how long, so I'm jumping to a later question. I was going to ask, I know you write books, we just mentioned those, and have the podcast, so which came first, was it the books or the podcast?
I started writing long before I did podcast. I remember writing a story as sitting as my dad was working in a church basement doing some painting, and I had a little notebook out when I was 9 years old, and I was writing a story. You know, I didn't know anything about like comics or, you know, what had happened, but I was writing a story where Batman meets Superman. I don't have any details of it, but I do think there are some people who think it might have been better if they'd gone with that rather than what Zack Snyder went with. But I've been writing since I was a kid, and even more, you know, when I got into college. And so I didn't start the podcast until I was an old man of 26. So.
When you replay previously broadcasted radio programs, I assume you have to deal with copyright issues. How does that work?
Well, in terms of the question of copyright, I think that, you know, it's something where you kind of have to work through it. As I've researched the law, the big thing that comes out is that radio programs prior to 1972 in the United States, really, there was not a big expectation of there being copyright protection. Many of the programs that we play, the way that it was done is it was aired once. There was no intention of re-airing or any future replay. So a lot of things in terms of what we think of in terms of copyright law was not even something that was even considered. So I think that in many ways they're effectively open. Most of the old time radio programs, you know, you couldn't find a clear owner. They've essentially been abandoned, but there's a lot of really interesting programs out there. And so, we've just kind of worked through them and presented them that way.
I didn't realize there's so much radio. Well, I shouldn't say so much radio, but so many programs back, probably before television, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was really the primary entertainment medium for the mass audience. You know, of course, there were the movies. But even when it came to the movies, you didn't have television replays. So you actually would have situations where they would adapt the movie to radio, like a movie that's 1 or 2 years old. They would try to get the original stars back. Sometimes they couldn't, and they would get new people in to play the roles. Like they had Lux Radio Theater adapted Casablanca. They could not get Humphrey Bogart, so they had Alan Ladd star as Rick in Casablanca. So radio really was the driving mass medium until television really came into popularity. And of course, the coming of television got delayed by World War II because, you know, we were kind of like having prototypes and early broadcasts, you know, back to 1937. But then the war came and just totally disrupted production and the piece and the sort of economy and settings. So radio continued to dominate into the 1940s. 1951 was the first time that television had more advertising dollars spent on it than radio. So it was very big for 30, 40 years as the premier source of like mass entertainment that was free.
Did you grow up listening to radio? Where does that interest come from?
Well, I heard audio dramas off and on when I was growing up. We did not really listen to a whole lot. We heard more stories from my dad about his experience listening to old-time radio. Because after the end of the golden age of radio, you had this kind of subculture that developed around the preservation of old-time radio and the trading of old-time radio. And so mostly these were, they were circulated on a few rebroadcasts during the 70s. There was kind of a revival of interest. But by the time I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, that wasn't as much of a thing, and the programs got pushed further back and back. But I do remember one time my dad was at a thrift store, and he got us a set of, I think it was 8 tapes with 16 different old-time radio comedies on them. And we listened to them. You know, I grew up loving Abbott and Costello. I have no exposure to their radio work other than one episode of the radio show when I was growing up. But I watched a lot of their films, you know, whatever we could get from the video store. Absolutely, you know, those guys were genius. And it was so fun finding them later on as we got into radio, and that started to become more widespread in terms of access.
Interesting.
Yeah. You are like an encyclopedia. You're a walking Wikipedia of names, dates. If you have thousands archived, I'm guessing you know just a whole lot you could say off the top of your head.
I do. I think that there's probably a time limit to the audience and people's attention spans in a given setting. So I will say I don't know everything or remember everything. Like sometimes I'll have listeners, you know, hit me up with a question like, you know, in this episode of Crime and Peter Chambers, this and this happened. And I'm like, I played that like 8 years ago, and I've played like 3,000 odd episodes since then. I do not remember what that was about. I'm sorry.
Funny. So I listened to a couple of your podcasts, and one of them you interviewed another podcaster, which is what we're doing now. But for each of your podcasts, do you have a certain format, or do you do this kind of the same format for all of them?
Well, for the podcast, I do have, you know, it's a pretty basic thing. It's usually introduction, then there's the episode, and then there's the commentary. Although I have been mixing it up. Occasionally, I'll have something where we'll have like a little bit of bonus audio, like on one of our Sam Spade episodes. Sam Spade was so big when he was on the radio and such a big part of pop culture, there were comedy skits like that Howard Duff, the star of the program, would do. And so we might just say, okay, and here's this little bit of bonus audio. We did do the, had Ron Eckelbarger on, and that's actually the first time I've had another podcaster on to kind of share the commentary duties. Because we don't typically have guests just because, you know, there's so many and, you know, so much to arrange, but it's mostly my commentary. I also respond to whatever listeners have emailed in, their questions, their comments, as long as they are constructive. And I just kind of roll with that. And the length of my commentaries can vary. Like if listeners ask me a question that sends me off on some titanic research or rabbit trail, you know, could go longer. And sometimes the episodes themselves will have things that I need to research. Like I found out what a silent butler was when I was listening to an episode of Sam Spade. And I guess since I've said that, to avoid the obvious question, a silent butler is essentially like this very special ornate dustpan with a lid that you can open and close. And it was particularly handy in the case, you know, when you had a lot of people who smoked. So you would go in with the silent butler, and if there were cigarette ashes, or if you were cleaning a table and there were bread pans, you would take this little broom and you would sweep it into the silent butler and close it.
Oh my!
So silent, as in its mouth was closed; it couldn't talk.
Exactly.
How funny.
Seems you'd eventually run out of episodes to rebroadcast. How do you plan to continue them? Or do you? Or, I mean, you've done a lot, but there are a lot, I guess.
Yeah, it's something where I would say plans are kind of in flux. With Great Detectives of Old Time Radio, I'm currently in the middle of doing season 14. And I would like to get to season 20. And I think that I can find enough little ways to get there. I've got some additional podcasting projects I'm thinking about doing. So, you know, I think that probably any sort of like major decision on that's at least you know, a good 6 years away. And that's one that I'll cross when I come to it.
Hmm. But could you start at the beginning and have another 20 years?
You know, when I first started out, I was very careful. You know, we're going to go ahead and we're going to play through each series and not really repeat. But I have kind of broken that rule with a little bit with some of the popular series. Johnny Dollar, I think Yours Truly Johnny Dollar, such a big popular series. I couldn't, it took me 9 years to get through every single episode.
Wow.
That we had in circulation, and I could not, but at the end, there were just so many people who come to the podcast through Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. I couldn't really end it, so I had to go ahead and start going through it again.
Johnny Dollar.
Hey, what are you doing at the Valentine House?
Get a car out here quick, Inspector. Terry Valentine's just been shot. Two guys
now
showed
slow
up.
Slow down. When did all this happen?
A few seconds ago.
Ambulance?
No good, DeBaca. She died in my arms.
Do you think they're still around there?
They must be. I'm going looking.
Now, wait a minute. This is a police matter. You stay put. I'll have a car there in 5 minutes and you can... Johnny, I heard that. Your gun. Now, look, you're all wound up. Don't do anything.
What I found listening to it the second time, because I thought, you know, if I listen to the same things over and over again, it's going to get, you know, boring. Mm-hmm. But I find that listening to it an additional time is a different experience because I'm a different person than I was 9 or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so you experience the stories in a different way and you have different insights and different commentary you come away from. So it's certainly a possibility. You know, that's a few years down the road, but we'll definitely be giving that some thought as we get into, you know, close to the end of the 2020s. So.
Well, and the actors are different now, too.
Oh, yeah.
They're dead.
Well, most of them were. There have been some who've passed while we've been doing it, but a lot of them, you know, died much, much younger. It was kind of fun with the Amazing World of Radio. Jessica Lansbury, or Angela Lansbury, I'm sorry, conflating with Jessica Fletcher, her character, but Angela Lansbury, I think passed away in the past year. And we kind of, for the Amazing World of Radio, if we can dig up an episode where an actor who's recently passed was in it, we'll go ahead and we'll do that. I think last year we did it for like Betty White and Larry Storch. We found radio programs. But with Angela Lansbury, you know, I offered my listeners, because my Patreon supporters, they vote for what we do on the Amazing World of Radio for our summer series. And I offer them the option of doing a summer of Angela Lansbury. So we went ahead and we did a series of old-time radio programs in which she appeared mainly in the 1940s, I think a few into the 50s. And it was so fun to be able to do that and to be able to celebrate her as a performer while she was still with us. So, and not to have to be like, you know, have that sort of sad undertone. But yeah, mostly the actors that we do here have passed on. I've thought if I wanted to ever do, I'm not really into spooky horror stuff, but if I ever wanted to do a spooky horror old time radio program, I would call it I Hear Dead People.
Oh, I like it.
That is good.
Yeah. Well, you kind of alluded to branching out with your podcasts. Are you going to do more with what you have, or are you thinking of starting others?
Well, I'm thinking of starting others. I don't want to get into too much detail, but I've got an idea for a couple, three sort of old-time radio podcasts and something that is not related to old-time radio. But we'll kind of see how things go and what we're able to launch, because I don't want to announce something before I'm sure that I've got, like, everything in a row.
All right, yeah. So do you do this weekly for each of your podcasts?
For the great detectives of old time radio, I record that essentially every week. I'll record those six episodes. For the amazing world of radio, it's something that I kind of record on a very periodic basis. We'll record a summer series voted on by our Patreon supporters. And then I'll also do holiday specials. We do one Thanksgiving specials. We do 2 hours of Christmas programming, which, you know, could be broken down a lot of ways. We had one Christmas where we just did one program. And then we'll have some, you know, miscellaneous holidays. We'll do a spring series. We'll do a couple Easter episodes on that. And the other podcasts are kind of at a state of completion. So I don't actively record on those. The war is probably one that often I've considered doing more, but the way that the war worked as a series is I went ahead and I did, I took old time radio and I took people chronologically through World War II. We started with the pre-war era and like this sort of isolationism and the disillusionment after World War I. And we went through that entire, you know, and then we went to Pearl Harbor, and then we went all the way through World War II to the end, and then we did some post-war stuff. And it was quite an experience, 277 episodes.
Wow.
And I did add to it twice, and I'm trying to avoid any temptations to add to it more because it was such a challenge. And it's pretty much as it is because it was quite an emotional experience to go through.
Yeah, sounds very interesting.
How do you keep track of, you mentioned some names, and when somebody says, like, how many did Betty White have, or this thing of going through chronologically, I suppose each episode has a date on it, but how do you remember or know who was in which and at what time and all that? Do you have a big spreadsheet or what?
I generally go with the, probably my big source is Radio Gold Index, which kind of for old time radio, it's a catalog system, and it's got what different actors have done and appeared in. And it's a resource. It's not perfect. Actually, it's a web, you know, it essentially has that disclosure, like we're a database, but we're not, we admit we're not complete and we're not perfect. But it's as helpful as anything else you have. But sometimes you'll listen to a program and you're like, oh, that was Jack Webb in there, but it's not in the Radio Gold Index because, you know, and sometimes the producers did not make it particularly easy to keep track because the shows that made it easy would be like saying, okay, this program, this starred Bob Bailey, featured Herb Vigran, featured Virginia Gregg, and list all the actors and actresses in it. But so many of them just don't have any or have very limited, like this episode starred Bob Bailey. Okay, well, anybody else in here? Or even like there's some series on the East Coast where they had a thing where they didn't even tell you who the star was. And you just have to kind of go off the guidebook. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, and there's also checking newspaper.com. And I guess my most recent contribution to old time radio podcast was finding out who the star of Michael Piper detective was, because this was like a short series from 1941. And every single resource had no idea who the star is. We knew who the co-star was. We knew John Gibson was it, but no information on who the star was. So I had to end up going through a newspaper, and I found that the series was originally named Michael and Kitty, and that the star was Santos Ortega. So, You have to go through some research on some things. And I'm also blessed that there are folks who have done research. John Abbott wrote a great book on who is Johnny Dollar matter, where he, you know, had listened to all the 700 programs that were in circulation. And then he also went to the library in Thousand Oaks and read through scripts, even for episodes that are not in circulation. So those are captured there with at least plot summaries. And because he looked at the scripts, then even on those episodes where we don't know who is in the cast from the radio program, he actually recorded the cast information so that we have that information. And there were so many folks who just, for love of old-time radio, have written those books. So you get a hold of those when you get into a series so that you understand it and you kind of know what's going on. And if there's not a book on the series, you just kind of wing it. There was, you know, one series, Mystery is My Hobby, that we did a few years back. And I like to be able to say what the original air date is for a program. But the thing is that the logs are all over the place. It's like some say, oh, yeah, this is 1945. No, this is 1946. This is 1947. This is 1950. And I could not find a definitive log. So I said, okay, this was a syndicated program. The programs have numbers. We're going to play episode one and then episode two. And it aired sometime in the 1940s or 50s, and I cannot decipher it. It's the answers are not out there. So,
well, just that we have that material is amazing that it's all available.
Yeah.
You also offer some video, right?
Yes, we do public domain video theater. Which is, you know, we take a public domain television show and movie, and we generally do two episodes of that per month. And right now we're going through the 1951 TV series, Dangerous Assignment, which was based on the radio program. So we're kind of getting to hear and see how that kind of translated to the screen. And then we're also doing U.S. Marshal, a series starring John Bromfield.
So do the same people star on radio and TV?
It does kind of depend. With a series like Dangerous Assignment, Brian Donlevy, who was the star of on radio, is there, and Herb Butterfield, who played the commissioner. One thing with early television in particular is, and I think this is true of Dangerous Assignment, they don't necessarily bring over the same caliber of acting to television. And that's been a challenge with some episodes of Dangerous Assignment on TV, because you would have like very smooth, polished radio actors starring in the radio plays, and then you would have like people with hardly any background at all, and there would be just some amazing directing decisions that were made. One of my favorite examples from Dangerous Assignment is in the radio version. Steve gets away from this femme fatale character, Steve Mitchell, played by Brian Donlevy, by going ahead and, while they're in the car together, forcing them off the road into this car crash, because she's going to kill him if they get to their destination. So he's got nothing to lose. So it's this action-packed scene. In the TV version, they don't have the budget for that. So she's holding a gun on him, and he throws a pillow at her, and then is able to disarm her. I mean, that is a tactic. I mean, you see, if you've got robbers in your house, I'm pointing at two pillows over there, you have got ways to disarm them, according to Dangerous Assignment.
That's funny.
But you also, when you get into these public domain shows, you get to see a lot of stars like before they were big, which is kind of a treat. On an episode of U.S. Marshal, we had in episodes last year that featured as guest stars Michael Landon and Charles Bronson before they hit it big. And so you kind of get that. We also saw Abe Bagoda. It was kind of funny. He was in a Studio One, which was a live TV series. They did an adaptation of Dashiell Hammett's short story, Two Sharp Knives. And Abe Bagoda appeared in it as at the beginning. And of course, you know, when he gets later on into his career, he was known for playing a lot of these middle-aged guys. But he was a young guy, but he was disguised and dressed up as a middle-aged guy in 1949. And we also got Dashiell Hammett. You know, long before Stan Lee started doing the cameos, Dashiell Hammett actually did a cameo in the production of Two Sharp Knives. Not as funny as the Stan Lee cameos, but yeah, so there are some unique things you get to see in the television programs, and just some, you know, interesting directing decisions, but also some pretty solid shows that have kind of been forgotten and neglected, so.
Interesting.
Hello?
To continue with my notes on the Sterling murder case.
What's that?
The two sisters were very clever in their idea.
What are you talking about?
But their mistake was in trying to be cleverer in their execution of the crime than they were in planning.
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Vance?
Yes?
Vance, that call came from Sergeant Marcy in the homicide department.
Yes, I know. I imagine it was something about the murder of the man who was called Chick, correct?
Yes, he just got the police laboratory report on the bloodstains on Chick Lewis's clothes.
And?
Vance, it wasn't human blood at all. It was chicken blood. Chick Lewis had chicken blood in his veins.
Really? Well, that changes things considerably.
Do you have like a little, I hate to use the word clique or a small special interest group where you get together and say, hey, what did you think? Or when did this happen?
I'm not aware of a clique as such, but I'm actually in a Facebook group where a lot of these writers do show up, or people who are known to them or who are connected to them showed up. It used to be where they had big old-time radio conventions starting in the 1970s. They had things like Friends of Old-Time Radio. And they did Spurtvac, I think is the way it's pronounced. They did big conventions. And they would actually bring back the original stars. And the stars would, you know, some of these people who had been in radio in the 50s, just kind of, they're like rock stars. And people asking them questions and signing autographs. A lot of folks like Harry Bartell participated in that. But as so many of them started to pass on, and some of the organizers started to pass on, a lot of those conventions have kind of gone away, although they've kind of fold into like larger nostalgia conventions. Like there's one out, I think in Pennsylvania called like the, or don't quote me on the location, the Mid-Atlantic Nostalgia Convention, where a lot of them will go with larger nostalgia, like for TV shows in the 70s and 80s and things like that.
Huh. I didn't know such a group or groups. So we haven't talked about your books. I listed, I think, most of them. Are you writing anything new right now?
I've been stalled for a while on finishing the Powerhouse series, and I want to get that done. I've also got a project that I think could work really well as a Kindle Vella. So I'm looking forward to hopefully being able to try and do that sometime in the near future. And so I'm working on a few things, but it's been a bit slow in terms of the writing, but I'm hoping to get more back into it as time goes on.
Kindle Vella is serializing, right? You just write a chapter at a time and put it out there?
Right. I've got the work finished, but I think serializing would be, or at least the first part of it finished. But I think serializing is probably going to be the best approach to start with on this.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And on that You seem drawn to detective stories and to comedy. So where did that start?
I think that, you know, comedy can go back to Abbott and Costello, and my dad had a big sense of humor. So I got a lot of that. In terms of detective stories, there were so many things. Probably the biggest thing that first got me interested in detective stories was something called Square One TV. And I don't know how many of your listeners will remember it, but Square One TV was a PBS series that taught kids about math by doing various sketches. And one of the sketches they did was a series called MathNet, which was a parody of the 60s and 70s Dragnet, where you had two characters, Kate Munday and George Frankly, who would go and solve crimes in the style of Dragnet, but teach kids math. And that was kind of my first exposure. And then I watched Matlock and Perry Mason and Diagnosis Murder. And then as I got older and got channels where we could see like the reruns of the Columbo mysteries, those I think were kind of the basis for what really got me interested in detective fiction. And of course, the Hardy Boys when I was growing up.
Of course.
Hardy Boys, in particular, the Case Files, to me, those were the cool ones because you had the originals, and those I kind of thought were like, those were my dad's generation. And then you had some that were definitely from the 70s, so those were more like my older brothers. But these looked really cool. And you know, looking at them as adult, they're not as cool as I thought they were. But to me, they seemed very grown up, very paperback. And yeah. They even had like super mysteries where Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys met. Nice. And so that particular style with the Hardy Boys Case Files and the Nancy Drew Files, that's really what first got me interested in the detective fiction, along with all of the TV shows I was able to catch growing up.
Very cool. I was a big Nancy Drew fan. And then when my brothers would bring home the Hardy Boys and Tom Swift from the public library up the street, I'd read those too.
Oh yeah, Nancy. I was secure enough to read Nancy Drew. Great, great mysteries, and yeah, of course Tom Swift. Though I tended to like the older Tom Swifts than the newer ones that were out. For whatever reasons, there's just such a little bit of more of the sort of sci-fi wonder about those ones that were from the 50s. Mm-hmm. And of course, those were not the original Tom Swift.
Oh,
you know?
Really?
Yeah, original Tom Swift was turn of the century. And in the first book, he gets a motorcycle. And it's all about the adventures he has on his motorcycle. And the books that were released in the 50s were actually Tom Swift Jr. So he was the son of the original Mr. Tom Swift. So the Mr. Swift you see in those 50 novels was the original Tom Swift that everybody grew up reading about. If you were like born before like the 40s or 50s, before the space age, and you get into the one with the blonde crew cut.
Oh, yeah.
On one of your podcasts, you have another voice you use. I'm guessing that's your acting skills coming through.
It's not something that I actively think about. But I have been told that I have a different voice, and I can tell maybe a little bit of difference as I'm talking here in this format. I think I was talking to a lady in preparation for another podcast interview, and was you know, using a different voice there without thinking about it, really. I don't know. It's been a subject of a lot of emails and questions.
Oh, really?
And actually, it was kind of funny that in January, somebody wrote a column, you know, a very favorable, very nice column about the podcast. And he said he wanted to go to Idaho, to Boise, to see if everybody talked like that. And, you know, of course, in this area, you know, you don't really have that sort of standard at all for anybody, let alone for podcast voice, because I think everybody around here is from kind of everywhere. And so if there is a native accent, it has been supplanted. So.
That's true. So where did you grow up?
Everywhere. Well, mostly in the West. We were up in the Yak area until I was about four. And then my dad sort of started itinerant preaching until I was about 11. And we ended up in Kalispell, Montana. But during that period, we ended up going all over like the kind of Northwest area. A lot of time in Washington, but also Idaho, Oregon, Utah, Arizona, and then in 91, we kind of went down south, and then we kind of came back to Kalispell and stayed in the general northwest area of the state until I left for Boise, came here in 2003.
Hmm. So we can't say it's your Oklahoma accent.
No. It's nothing I picked up. It's not anything I picked up anywhere specifically.
Well, it's fun.
Yeah, I know. When I heard it, I said, "I wonder where he's really from." When you said, however you say it on the podcast, from Boise, Idaho. Yeah. Well, I don't think that's one of those change your voice devices.
No. Whatever I do, it's being done naturally without any specific thought. Like, it's no sort of plot or plan. Like, and sometimes people think certain words sound differently. Like, there are people who think that when I say old time radio, that I'm saying old Tom radio. It's like, my radio's name is Tom.
Tom, yeah. Funny. So we have kept you here for a while. Anything else our listeners should know? We'll ask about your website and all your social media information in a minute, but there's something about radio you'd like to tell everybody?
I would just say that there's a lot out there, and I think we have never had more ability to explore and to discover all of the sort of treasures and nuggets out there. And whether you're interested in things like slice of life, old game shows, or if you like Hallmark movies, there are even radio programs I think you would probably like. So I think that there's a lot to explore and a lot that's worth checking out. So I would just encourage people to consider checking out all of the amazing resources we've got, mostly for free, for people to look in and to discover old-time radio.
So tell us then, Adam, about your website, social media, all of that, how people can get in touch with you and your books.
Sure. You can find all of my books, audiobooks, ebooks, wherever fine ebooks are sold. Amazon's fine. You can check out my website, Great Detectives of Old Time Radio, at greatdetectives.net. You can check me out on Twitter at Radio Detectives. You can find me on Instagram at instagram.com/greatdetectives. And you can also check me out on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives.
Okay, so all your podcasts, I looked at your website, so they're all listed in that one place there, right?
Right. Oh, and yeah. You can also find me on YouTube, youtube.greatdetectives.net, if you're just into doing the YouTube thing.
Okay.
That's a lot of ways. See, I would have to write all of that down. That's a whole list.
Well, the thing is, you record 4,000 episodes, so most of those things I've said like at least 2,500 to 3,000 times.
Yes.
Well, maybe I would remember it then. Well, that's about it. Thanks for coming, Adam. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you, Adam, and we thank our listeners for joining us. Remember, you too have a story. Be sure to live it to the fullest.
Thank you for listening to Let Me Tell You a Story. Please email your comments, suggestions, and submissions to story@beckylyles.com. That's all for now. Tune in next time to enjoy a fresh assortment of stories on Let Me Tell You a Story.